I hadn't received one for more than 3 months by this time, and it took me by surprise just as it had the very first time. Only this time I knew I had time to prepare myself and my computer to receive it. At this new base, it was much easier to report comms because workstations were farther apart, located within a huge open room. Most of the time I could work totally uninterrupted. But when interruptions did occur, they were more unpredictable. At base number 1, I would know if I was to have a visitor so I could prepare. At base number 2, anyone could walk up at any time and completely take me by surprise. I became very good at sensing if anyone was approaching my workstation while I was reporting a comm. It was quite easy to suspend a comm if need be, so I often would do it to head off any nosy questions. Enter Bones. The first comm I received at PPD base number 2 was of the same structure as all the others I had received up to that time. More numbers and seemingly codified strings of numbers and letters. But I realized that I was not coming with the same gray contact as I was before. It seemed Spock had been replaced. I could sense the change from the texture of the message. Communicating intuitively is like touching and feeling an exquisite tapestry when compared to our normal means of communication. It was so much more vibrant than any of the senses we humans typically use in touching, hearing, seeing, tasting and smelling. All these are sensed in a one-dimensional world compared to the richness of communicating intuitively. During the first comm at my new base, I noticed the texture of the tapestry had changed. Before, when comming with Spock, I had nothing to compare his tapestry with because it was my first and only gray contact. I had come to expect every comm to be the same. This one was quite different. As soon as I had logged into my reporting window, I gave the go-ahead for the first of many comms I would receive from the gray contact I called Bones. The irony of the nickname I had given to my first PPD contact did not so readily apply to this one. So with no descriptive name coming to mind, I continued with the Star Trek theme. I immediately sensed that this was a different gray. As Bones was about to sign off, I sent a comm, on the other plane, asking why my contact had changed. I wasn't sure if he just didn't receive my comm before completely signing off or he totally ignored it. But he was gone. After he signed off, I tried to assess the differences between his comm and Spock's. It was like he had a different shape and texture to his tapestry. Spock was definitely more rigid, with his comms being more punctuated and tighter around the edges. Bones appeared to be more human than Spock, in that his emotions were more readily apparent. I couldn't help but wonder what emotions their ace was capable of. I was very intrigued and couldn't wait for my next comm. I was also looking forward to trying the higher plane, again, to see what his reaction would be, or if he even would react. Bones' revelations after that first comm with Bones, and realizing it was a different gray I would be communicating with, I was anxious to attempt going to the higher plane. Based on my experiences with Spock, I assumed he would also be curious at my ability to go to this other level. I was not mistaken. The very next comm came a few days after the first. I went to the other plane as soon as he was finished with the preamble. He asked the identical question Spock asked, if I had intentionally switched planes. I answered to the affirmative, I had indeed done it on purpose. Bones immediately continued with the normal comm on the normal plane as if nothing had happened. I was so preoccupied with his reaction that I don't think my comm reporting was very accurate. How could he completely ignore it and go on? I received the comm like normal, not knowing what else to do. As the comm came to a close, instead of signing off like normal, Bones began to communicate with me on the other plane once again. This took me by surprise, as I fully expected him to sign off after the comm. What are your intentions by communicating on this plane? Bones asked, being quite forward in his question. I was able to find this plane while coming with my previous PPD contact, quite by accident. It was interesting to find there was another level of communication, but I was unable to fully explore communicating on this plane with the previous PPD contact because I moved shortly thereafter. There was so much I wanted to ask him. I thought I could ask you, now that you are my contact. Would that be okay? I asked. We have no preferences regarding communicating on this level, he replied. Is that a yes or a no? I am not clear on your answer, I answered back, wondering what he meant by his last statement. You are not clear on the answer because you expect a different one, he said enigmatically. I wasn't sure what he meant, but I didn't care, I was going to move forward. How come I can come with you so informally on this plane but not on the other? I was intentionally asking the same question I had asked Spock in order to compare answers. There are no specifications on the formality of your communication with us. It is true the lower plane is a plane used solely for the purposes of pre-existing communication subjects, but I have never pursued non-pre-existing comms with you because there has never been a reason to do so. That was a great answer, because it was how Spock answered the same question. Continuing with the comparison, I asked, is communicating on this plane authorized? There is no harm in this communication, he said, responding the same way Spock had months earlier. Not wanting to cover too much of the same ground as I did with Spock, I tried to think of other things to ask. Because of my own personal needs at the time, the most profound thing I could think of was, do you eliminate waste, like we do? I could swear that if they were capable of laughter, I could hear it in the background. I could sense a bubble in our communication like I had never experienced before. Was it laughter? I don't know, but it might have been. Yes, 118, we have that need as well, but not in the same manner, he answered back without any embarrassment or any other emotions that we as humans would feel if asked the same question. With that, he signed off. Our first higher plane come went smoothly, I thought. Bones was just as abrupt as Spock. When he wanted to end communication, he ended it. There were no formalities like we have ... that is, well, gotta run, you take care ... etc. I would receive end of command, communications would cease. Over the course of 10 months at PPD base number 2, I received over 75 comms from Bones. During that time we communicated on the higher plane on numerous occasions. What I learned from Bones during that time frame doesn't come back to me in a neatly packaged chronological order. I remember the things I learned from Bones more as a gradual progression of knowledge that built upon itself over time. I must also say that I don't profess to have learned a great deal of earth-shattering revelations from my comms with these people. I was able to glean some information over the time period I commed with them, but I didn't learn as much as I would have liked. When you remaking up a story, like so many people out there who claim to have channeled or spoken to aliens, you have creative license to come up with as much stuff as you need to fill your book. To clarify, I don't consider myself to be a channeler. The way I understand it, channeling is when a person takes on the identity of the person, or entity, they are trying to contact. Unfortunately, I didn't receive an encyclopedia of information like so many others. I've taken the liberty of consolidating some of the things I remember discussing with Bones, in no particular order. Time I learned that time, as we know it, does not have the same meaning for them. They still age as we do, but they are not as bound by the physics of time as we currently are. Of course, this would be an obvious assumption for anyone who follows any amount of science fiction. I have always been fascinated with time, therefore it was one question I asked on multiple occasions. Their means of travel across vast distances is heavily dependent on the manipulation of time, but not as we perceive it. I asked if they can travel through time. For example, can they go backward or forward in time? He told me that it was not possible to witness a reality that occurred in some other time but the present. In order to go back in time, one must assume that there exists a reference point from which to measure backward or forward. This is an impossibility. Essentially, they aren't able to travel through time but around time and from time. I never really understood what Bones meant by this. Religion being brought up in the Christian faith, I naturally had questions about the meaning of faith and the institution of religion in general. One question I remember quite clearly was when I asked if they had a soul. As was usually the case, his answer was quite curious. Perhaps someone reading this will be able to understand it better than I. He said that any entity that realizes its own existence has intellect and therefore must have a soul. We have been created from the same oneness, my interpretation, and out of that creation came intellect and non-intellect. These are the only forms of life in the universe. We were both, them and us, along with many others, a part of the intellectual aspect of creation. When I asked if there was a God, he answered that it was not his place to answer that question. But he said something like the question you ask answers itself. It was all kind of obscure place any concrete meaning to. Based on what he was saying at the time though, I do remember coming to the conclusion that there must be a God that we all shared. How long they've been visiting? He said they have been visiting us, again, he used the term water vessels or some such equivalent, for a very long time. I really didn't understand the terms he was using for time when describing to me how long they've been here, but I remember thinking it must have been a long time. He said they had visited cultures from time to time throughout our history. None of the direct contacts they've initiated turned out well. This is one of the reasons they are not common, my interpretation of another unfamiliar term, visitors today. However, he said that it was much easier to visit our people in the past than it is today. They revealed themselves on many occasions in the past and even contributed to certain societies and their technologies. They learned much from the engaging of other people. But since our technology has leapfrogged, the risk of revealing themselves on a worldwide scale, at this time, is not a worthwhile endeavor. My own readings have led me to believe they most likely impacted the Incan, Mayan and Egyptian societies. I think these would be obvious assumptions, if you knew aliens exist and visited past cultures. It is also very possible that the lost continent of Atlantis is a remnant civilization that was affected by aliens. I never asked this question, although now I wish I had. Interbreeding, I stumbled upon a piece of information during one com, but I can't quite remember what the line of conversation was about. I do remember thinking that they had interbred with humans at one time. Maybe it was another species of aliens. I can't remember. But I feel it is quite possible there are people living today that are descendants of interterrestrial pairings. My suspicions are, if this is true, that the Basque people of the mountains between Spain and France are the most likely candidates in the search for their progeny. I have read that the Basque language has no identifiable roots and that they are also genetically different than all other humans on the planet. As far as I can tell, from the scientific community, they are a human anomaly. This could explain why. Other intelligent life. According to Bones, there is a vast number of other intelligences in the universe. I got the feeling when I asked this that he felt it was a dumb question. Sexes. I had asked at one time if they had two sexes like we do. The answer was yes. It seems they procreate as well, but not in the same manner. I didn't go any further in my questioning, and he didn't volunteer any more information. Mode of travel. When he answered this question, I didn't understand half of what he was telling me and couldn't translate it if I did. What little I got from the conversation was that they somehow used time and electromagnetic energy as a source of propulsion. There were times when I regretted not listening more closely in Physics 101. Lifespan. Their lifespan is similar to ours, but I was not able to understand the time measurements he was using. I always had a hard time understanding any aspect of time when it was discussed in reference to a timetable. Bones made me understand that their lifespans are similar to ours, perhaps even shorter. Energy. When asked about energy and what form of it they use, he didn't mention their energy source but did speak about our energy sources. He told me that our sun was very unique and that someday we would understand how it really worked and how we could utilize the same methods they use but on a smaller scale. He said our scientists have just begun to understand how the sun can be used as a source of energy for our future needs. Project Preserve Destiny. When queried on this subject, Bones would almost always sign off. There were two occasions he didn't though. Once he answered the question of how many countries were involved with it. His answer was less than exact, but it was an answer. He said, more than one. The other question was concerning the future event that I had been told this whole project was about. He said only that the Earth is in its geological infancy and that we should expect much change. With that he signed off. What did he mean by this? Was it just a ruse, and the project was for something else? ILL. Probably never know. Noise cancellation technology. So what did my run-in with the white van have to do with anything? I asked Bones about noise cancellation and the significance of same. This was one of the topics I never received an answer for. I thought it quite odd that he would either not answer or sign off every time I asked about this topic. Of course, by reacting this way, I became even more intrigued than if he would have given me a simple answer and moved on. To this day, I still wonder what noise cancellation has to do with PPD. I have done much reading on the subject over the past few years, since the white van incident, and have come up with some interesting information, but nothing necessarily linking it to PPD. If taken to its extreme, noise cancellation has numerous military applications. Some forward-thinking physicists may even be able to correlate it with propulsion somehow. Noise cancellation works on the principle of negative phase theory. If you analyze the frequency of the noise you want to eliminate, determine its discrete phase angles at a very high data rate, you can generate an identical frequency calculated to be 180 degrees out of phase with the original frequency. If you mix the two frequencies together in a process called heterodyning, you get 180 to 180 equals zero. Of course, I've summarized this explanation for the sake of simplicity. It is my theory that the government is working on this type of technology and is eons ahead of the civilian noise cancellation world in terms of advances. Again, if taken to the extreme, this technology can go beyond the original uses of simply cancelling an unwanted noise. Light is also made up of electromagnetic energy and has a frequency. What if a person could control the cancellation of light at will? Think of the implications if a country had full use of this ability. I am not a physicist, but I can tell you that the uses of this technology are innumerable. My final conclusion on the white van, after much thought, is this: as you have learned in this book, grey projects are always hidden behind black projects. While I was attending PPD school, Captain White told me that I wouldn't be briefed on the black project that cloaked PPD there at the school, because I wouldn't be working on its mission and therefore had no need to know. So it is my contention that the black project located there had something to do with noise cancellation and perhaps had no tangible connection to PPD at all. Or, maybe it did have something to do with it. Regardless, I am anxious to know more about this technology. Hopefully any advanced applications relating to this technology will filter its way down to the consumer market someday. Fascinating stuff. Meanwhile, I am buying stock in that company. Abduction data microms started to change over the period of time I was at PPD base number 2. It was almost as if it was another step I was taking in my progression as an ICK. The data started to become more pictorial in nature. I reported an abundance of launch data immediately after launches of the Ariane, Shuttle and other Nation-S rocket programs. I remember one launch in particular. There had been a malfunction during the launch which ended up destroying the vehicle. During the COM I received following that launch, I could actually see where the malfunction had occurred, but I couldn't report it because I didn't know how to describe what I was seeing. It was quite odd. I simply reported what I could translate into words. I am sure if they would have shown me pictures, I could have pointed out where it malfunctioned. I did report at the end of the COM that I had received mental images of the malfunction but was unable to describe it. Evidently it wasn't important enough to follow up on, because I never heard anything about it later. But it wasn't until I was at PPD base number 2 for 8 or 9 months that I started to receive information that was, on the face of it, startling to me. Within about 5 months of my arrival, I had been moved into a management position pertaining to my non-PPD duties and, as such, was working a day schedule. I had access to the same computer network that I had prior to my promotion, so I could just as easily, if not more privately, access my PPD reporting window from my new desk. This new work schedule made for a more routine comms reporting schedule as well. Evidently, somebody was aware of this because I began to receive my comms during the day only. It was 3 or 4 months after my positional promotion that I received what appeared to be my first abduction-related comm. These comms would begin like all other comms, the sending of the normal preamble information containing my identifying code of 118 and the 5-digit zip code number. But the rest of the comm was completely different. There would be other items in the comm, including such things as potentiality for recall, residual pain level, nerve response, body normalization, and other more obscure things I can't recall because they made no sense. My first abduction comm included a latitude, longitude coordinate that I later looked up to find that it corresponded to the panhandle of Florida. As I look back on it, I could see a gradual progression of how the comms were being reported to me. At PPD base number 1, almost without exception, the official comms I reported were in some sort of code residing in a long string of numbers. As I moved to my next base, the comms began to be more descriptive in nature, with the reporting of the launching events, along with other image-based data. But now, they had taken one more step in the evolution. I would not describe the newest comms as particularly visual, however. This information translated more from a spoken context but, nonetheless, were altogether disturbing to report. The ratings assigned to each category I reported seemed to be on a scale of 1-100. What frustrated me was I had no idea which was the upper end of the scale and which was the lower. Below is an example of what the report of an abduction comm would look like if the typing on the screen would have been visible. 118/23576/94010/potentiality-for-recall-72/residual-pain-21/nerve-response-curve-63/body-normalization-97/03835N14503E/. After receiving the first few comms containing this information, I could see that the format was standardized. I began to report the categories by using their initials of the terms such as PFR for potentiality for recall, etc. The subject field would always contain an 11-digit number and the field after that was obviously the date of the abduction. I say that because most times it would not correspond to the actual date I received the comm but a date several days earlier. The date would vary between 1 to 3 days prior to the date of the report. The next field, I believe, was the time the abduction took place, according to what time zone, I don't know, followed by the individual explanation fields. The last field was obviously the latitude and longitude of the abduction. This time I looked up some of the coordinates because I had access to maps in my work center. On 3 separate occasions I looked the locations up and I discovered one corresponded to the panhandle of Florida, another to upstate New York and the other to Wisconsin. Based on my familiarity with worldwide lat longs at the time, though, I could tell that every one of the abduction scenarios that I reported took place within the continental US. I finally came to the conclusion, after reporting over 20 apparent abduction scenarios, that I wanted no part of the program any longer. Although I had no reason to believe anyone was being maliciously harmed, I did get a feeling that the abductions I was reporting were part of some sort of higher calling and the feelings of the people involved took a backseat to that calling. I couldn't help but think about my mother and what she possibly went through during the genetic management phase of PPD. Bitterness grows because of the things I began to report regarding the abduction scenarios. I started to question why this was happening. The beginning of the end started one day after I had reported a comm with the usual abduction sequences. I sat there at my desk looking at my computer screen, after reporting a comm, wondering what I was doing. I suddenly didn't have enough information anymore. I wanted to know more and my level of anxiety about it all was beginning to rise dramatically. When I was first indoctrinated into the program, I was so awestruck with everything I was learning I didn't question anything. But now, 2.5 years later, I was no longer intimidated by my superiors nor the elusive nature of the classification of the project itself. I began to feel bitter. The bitterness began a few months after I had started to receive comms from Bones. It hit a sharp incline when I began to receive the abduction comms, and now it hit a crescendo. I was tired of being supposedly so important because of my abilities, yet treated like an underling with no need to know. I think I would not have begun to feel this way if I had somehow been made a part of the whole process, if I would have been made aware of the reasons for everything. Why the abduction data? Why had everything been passed in code, mostly, until now? I had so many questions and I wasn't getting any answers. I suddenly wanted to tell everything I knew to everyone. I felt like a butterfly trying to break out of the confines of the ugly old cocoon. I had been cooped up in this classified cage for too long and I wanted to come clean. People had a right to know what was going on. And if they shouldn't know, then tell me why they shouldn't know. It was very frustrating. I knew as long as I stayed in the military, my feelings of loneliness would persist and most likely get much worse. It had affected my personal life drastically. I had slowly built a wall around myself over the past 2.5 years because I feared getting close to anyone. I had even sacrificed my love life all this time because I feared becoming involved with someone and coming to a point in the future of telling them about my experiences and them rejecting me because either they wouldn't believe me or, worse yet, think I was a freak. So I put in for an early discharge through my organizational, non-PPD, chain of command. At the time, the Air Force was letting people receive early discharges in select career fields in an attempt to draw down the number of personnel. There had been others who had received an early out in my career field, so I thought I had a slight chance. At the time, we were experiencing a massive drawdown of all the armed forces. A few weeks went by and I was informed that my request was denied. I asked my non-PPD commander why, and he told me that I was in a critically manned career field and they weren't letting anyone out. I knew my next step would be fruitless, but I tried it anyway. In a way I am glad, because it provided the catalyst for my eventual discharge in a roundabout way. I sent an email message to my PPD commander. In the message, I asked if there was any way I could receive an early out discharge. Within the hour I had received an email back, summarily denying my request. So I sent a message back, asking why. He came back with the same answer I had received from my other commander, that my career field was a shortage career field and that it would be impossible to let me out. But this time, within the text of the message, he asked me why I wanted out. I told him I no longer felt that the Air Force was what I wanted in life and that I was anxious to pursue a career as a civilian. I preferred to get out now instead of waiting for my enlistment to be up in November of 1997. Then came the message that set me off and solidified my resolve to get out at all costs. He sent a message back saying that since I had been officially indoctrinated into PPD, it would be impossible for me to get out, even when my current enlistment came to an end. This absolutely threw me for a loop. I had never heard of such a thing. I sent back a message asking for clarification because it sounded like he meant I wouldn't be able to get out until someone else said so, regardless of what I wanted and when my enlistment was over. "Correct," came the reply. I was beside myself with anger. What he was saying, essentially, was that I was stuck indefinitely, even if my enlistment were to end on its own accord. How could they do that? I couldn't believe what I was hearing. I felt like an animal that had just been cornered, so I did what anyone would do when cornered. I resolved to come out swinging. I went home that night, plotting my next strategy. I was going to get out of the military now, come hell or high water. They were finished controlling my life. I am convinced that if he hadn't made me so angry, I would have perhaps calmed down and at least stayed for the rest of my enlistment. Even though, according to Captain Gregory, I wouldn't have been able to get out even then, I knew that whatever I did, I had to do it through non-PPD channels. I came up with just such a plan. Discharge. Towards the end of my involvement with PPD, I noticed Bones was reacting a bit differently.